Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. This is Eric Loomis, here with Rob Farley and Scott Lemieux for our annual NFL preview. Everyone's excited, I know. People are also, of course, excited about what we are consuming this evening. I personally have a Prairie Rainbow Sherbet Sour, which is out of Oklahoma, the rare, superb brewery from the Sooner State. If you get a chance to have some Prairie, it's a little pricey, but it's worth it. Scott, Rob, how y'all doing?
Ooh, so fancy. A little bit of a green point green point action. Yeah. I have a Coke Zero from a iconic Pacific Northwestern dining establishment here.
Please tell me you had the deep fried tater.
I didn't. Getting tater tots after on the way home from the gym just seems, because they're good. The tater tots are excellent, but I just went for the Baja tacos, which are the fish tacos, which are actually very nice.
I'm not actually sure I've ever been to Taco Time, even though it's a Northwest institution. Like, we never really went there when I was a kid. So
it is better than Taco Bell, I will say that.
Mm. It's better than Taco Bell. I mean, it's much like Burgerville, right? There is a certain acquired taste to it, but yes, no, it's quite good.
Well, anyway. Yeah, like, we're going to talk about the NFL, and we can talk about fast food and beer as well, but we're going to talk about the NFL, and, it's an interesting year in the NFL, year two of COVID, Trevor Lawrence is probably the most anticipated quarterback rookie since Andrew Luck. You have extra playoff teams. You have an extra game this year, which means you're going to have extra injuries, which are exciting for all. So there's a lot to go through here. So I guess we'll start. Scott, Rob, do you guys have any, before we start, just going into the divisions or whatever, any sort of initial thoughts on the NFL as it begins here on Thursday?
I'm awfully excited to see some football, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I'm just really looking forward to some football. So I've obviously there was a lot of college this last week, and I'm sure that we could talk at some point in the future about Washington Huskies football, but I'm just really looking forward to the NFL starting up.
Yeah, let the entire LGM audience know that 8 weeks later, the fine folks at Comcast have still not provided me with any cable or wireless service. So I'll have to be, but that may mean that I will be making, if the sportsbooks open in time, I may be on an experiment to go to one of Washington's mediocre tribal casinos and be a pioneer in Washington's legal sports betting, so I can find someplace to watch the game.
I want to clarify: are you saying the tribes here are mediocre, or are you saying that the casinos are mediocre? Because that's
tribes
important.
Are excellent. The casinos are mediocre. Let me be perfectly. Thank you for allowing me to clarify that point. It's very, very, very important.
I will be in a kind of a perfect NFL scenario in that Saturday I'm watching, Oregon lose to Ohio State on TV, which is an early game, which is great because then I'm going to drive to Boston, watch Guided by Voices play, no doubt a very loud show, drive back, and then I will be very tired so I can lay on the couch and watch NFL all day Sunday, which is a perfect day. So I am excited. All right. Well, now it's time to head on to the NFC. The home of your America's team, Seattle Seahawks. I think we can all agree about that. Before we get to that, why don't we start with the biggest joke division in the entire of football, just like last year, the NFC East, home of teams I don't like. Last year there was the playoff bound Washington Genocides, which has still refused to come up with a new name. Which I guess is whatever, but it was a division so bad that the Genocide won the division. That is pretty bad. And also, ha ha, screw you, Cowboys, which I think is exactly what's going to happen this year. So, Rob, why don't you have any thoughts about this fine football stylings of the NFC East?
My first thought here is that, like, once again, the Washington Rough Riders, this seems fairly straightforward. My second thought here, and I am going to digress here from my prepared remarks, Cleveland fucking Guardians. I mean, come on. What the fuck, right? I mean, why do you go with the Guardians rather than the Spiders, right?
Spiders clearly were the better choice, unquestionably.
Spiders were... Spiders had more merchandising. Spiders had better logo appeal. Spiders had historical appeal. I mean, what the hell? I understand there may have been some copyright issues somewhere, but how do you, I guess if you have to live in Cleveland to make a mistake that bad, right? I mean, like, and that's probably, you're living in Cleveland because you're prone to making mistakes that bad, right? And so, you know, I can understand why Washington has decided to take a moment here, given Cleveland's epic fuck up, and say, well, maybe we should step back and like try to think of something. But yeah, I mean, it really, you know, it can't be that hard to pick a team name. Rough Riders, the WFL team was the Ambassadors. I can't remember what the, I think they had a We Laugh team. I think they had a USFL team. I can't remember what they were.
But just Jello Biafra already laid this out in his song Mascot Mania, the Washington Brides. You know, I mean, it's the
Washington filibusters. Anyway, so I mean, you know, Washington is the only, I can only pick Washington to win this division because all the other teams are terrible. You know, the Giants are going to continue to pretend that Daniel Jones is an ambulatory human being for at some point, we would presume. You know, if Dak Prescott had been able to practice at any point in the last, what, 18 months, then I might suspect the Cowboys could win this awful, awful division, but I don't see it. And the Eagles are best not spoken of. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it really feels like, and I don't really see a likelihood that a wild card team is going to come out of this division. Although I guess these teams play 8 games against one another, right? And so one of, you know, the second best one might win enough of those games to get into wild card contention. I don't really know.
I don't know. I mean, the Cowboys would be possible, but even as I said, Prescott, the defense was historically horrible last year, right? And it's not like they're going to be that much better this year. I mean, you know, you're not going to win giving up 40 points a game. And so that's to me is the real killer for Dallas. And even if the offensive line is decent again, and assuming Ezekiel Elliott continues to have another quality year running back, and even if Prescott's back at all, you're still talking about arguably the worst defense in the NFL. So I just don't really see it. And, you know, the Eagles, I mean, you know, good luck with Jalen Hurts. I don't know that what a mess of a team that's become. I mean, it's almost like they wish Chip Kelly was coaching. You know, so I guess I go to Washington, but mostly I just go, who gives a shit? Like, it doesn't matter. Someone's going to get a really easy wild card game, and maybe it'll be Seattle, and it'll all be good, and they'll go win in New York or Washington or somewhere else. I don't know. That's the only thoughts I have on the NFC East.
I'd pick the Cowboys just because they have the highest upside in the division. Like, they, you know, I mean, if you know, like, you know, certainly, you know, Prescott, if healthy, is by far the best quarterback in the division. You know, and he's got legitimate weapons as well. You know, despite Elliott being one of the most, you know, overrated players in football. You know, the basic, it's a question of whether you want the upside or whether you want the higher floor. I mean, the football team has like by far the best coach in the division and a pretty good defense. But you know, like, you know, Fitz is a nice guy to have for like 5 games at a time, but teams that go into him expecting him to be their regular quarterback for the whole year have not fared well. And there is nothing behind him. Like who the fuck is the backup in Washington? Like Taylor Heinicke, and Kyle Allen.
Well, I guess.
And Fitzpatrick is like 100 years old too. Like, you know, that's, yeah. So, you know, despite my vast misgivings about Mike McCarthy, I myself would pick the Cowboys, but not because I like the Cowboys, but because the rest of the division is, you know, I mean, the Giants have spent a lot of money on defense. This could be one of their, but I don't like Daniel Jones at all. You know, basically the judge seems to be midway between Flores and Matt Patricia on the baby Belichick scale. You know, but definitely seems like the kind of dollar store general type, and the Eagles, I mean, good God. What a disaster.
I think we need to talk just a second here, since you brought up about the coaching stylings of Mike McCarthy. I mean, you know, it was kind of amazing that, you know, Jerry Jones hired him after he's such clearly a disaster in Green Bay. Hey, lo and behold, the Packers become good again and the Cowboys are horrible. You know, is there more overrated?
Well, it's basically the best way of, like, it's sort of like he's forced to hire Jason Garrett, but like, bring in Mike McCarthy is more or less, you know, not, you know, it's the closest you can get to not firing Jason Garrett. Like, I think they might have the same playbook, and I think it's like on one index card. And of course, let us not forget that Jason Garrett is currently the offensive coordinator of your New York Giants. Yes.
one can see that through the incredible development of Daniel Jones.
Yes. No. So you're not going to get a lot of schematic innovation in this. So, but yeah, it's just amazing what was, you know, perennially such a strong division is just, you know, it's basically the new AFC South. Like it is just an absolute train wreck.
The good thing, of course, is that each of those teams still gets like four primetime games. So,
oh yeah.
It's always exciting.
Cowboys are the first game of the year, right? On Thursday. Is that?
I believe it is.
Cowboys, yeah. Tampa, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that Washington-Dallas game is always a really important one, especially late in the season. Lots of playoff implications. Said somebody in 1986, and they say it every single year after that.
I did like when the NFL went to having the Sunday night football game, the last game of the season, be based on playoff implications. And for three straight years, it was the Cowboys against one of their NFC East rivals, and they lost all three games, so they never went to the playoffs. I really enjoyed that personally.
Yeah, right up there with that Cardinals Seahawks game with like Charlie Whitehurst going on.
The only other NFC East note I will make is I recently finished my Jerry Jones obituary. So at some point in the future, that will be published.
Yeah, excellent. So yeah, no, but it is. And also remember that like Flexton game ended up with like, you know, two, like a quarter and a half of the stylings of Nate Sudfeld, which is particularly funny because like the Eagles like spent a lot of money to keep him on the roster for 4 years. But, you know, anyway, let's be clear. Colin Kaepernick was not blackballed. He just is not good enough to, you know, be on it. Also, I believe Nathan Peterman made the roster in Las Vegas. If I'm not mistaken,
he has indeed. Yeah,
and I also believe he was the only quarterback to take a snap for the Raiders in the postseason. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it's the first time.
Yeah, no, he's a number three quarterback in Las Vegas.
Yeah, but anyway, all right. Well, this is enough time on a terrible division. Let's move on to the South, which honestly is also a terrible division outside of Tampa. So, Scott, why don't you take this one?
You know, so again, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the Saints are, so, you know, obviously I think that, you know, you would, if you were going to pick one team, you would pick the Buccaneers. You know, the defense is very good. The weapons are very good. You know, there has to be some point in which Tom Brady shows some signs, but there's really no, you know, particular reason to believe it'll be this year. You know, and obviously the Saints, you know, were a top five team last year with Drew Brees and Taysom Hill taking most of the starts. It does look like Sean Payton has finally figured out that he should play the actual NFL quarterback rather than the, you know, wild card guy. And Jameis is really interesting in that, you know, he's somebody who, if he can be, you know, if Payton can coach him up to reduce five fewer interceptions, he's better than Drew Brees was last year, although not, you know, obviously within like 20 zip codes of good Drew Brees. You know, but again, the Saints don't need spectacular quarterback play to be good. They need, you know, but in ways like I like, as gambles go, I like Jameis over, say, Teddy Bridgewater. Like Jameis could be a train wreck, but you could also see him like really having a good playoff game, which is better than somebody, you know, who'll be, you know, like Bridgewater is the guy you want to like get you into the wild card game and lose like 24/7. You know, Jameis is an interesting, but I think that for a team as good as the Saints, I'd rather have the upside and hope that like that Peyton can coach him up a little bit. Now, I think you'd still have to take the Buccaneers, who have, you know, excellent coaching, you know, the defending champion. But if Brady gets old, you know, I certainly see I think the Saints could step into the breach. You know, the Panthers and Falcons, I do not like at all.
Yeah, Jameis is the guy you want to get to that wild card game and lose 48-7 instead of 24-7. Oh yeah, no, I mean this is worth talking about at length, right? Because Scott, I mean, I believe you've made the argument in the past that interceptions are actually one of the things that is predictable. It is a trait that NFL quarterbacks have that endures from year to year, right? And you know, with Jameis, right? I mean, he's an extraordinarily talented athlete, right? And he throws a lot of interceptions, right? I mean, that was the case when he was a quarterback at Florida State, right? That, you know, for a national championship Heisman Trophy winner, he threw lots and lots of interceptions. Then when we got to the NFL, he continued to throw lots and lots of interceptions. And I don't understand why, when we generally associate throwing lots of interceptions as a trait that a quarterback has, we would start thinking that suddenly he's not going to throw a lot of interceptions. Now, on a game-to-game basis, right, he may not throw five interceptions in a particular game, right? He may throw six touchdowns and zero interceptions, but he's going to throw a lot of interceptions this year. And that is supported by the fact that last year, the Saints could not find it in their hearts to put him into games, right? They still had to put Hill. He was on the roster last year, right? And so I think I agree with you. They've sort of made the right choice here by putting him ahead of Hill, because at least there's some upside. But I just don't know why we should still be optimistic about Jameis Winston as an NFL quarterback when his most notable characteristic is, his two most notable characteristics are the ability to throw lots of yards and many, many interceptions. And that's what it feels to me that the New Orleans Saints are going to find out of him this year. I see the Buccaneers winning this division. Looking at the other divisions in this conference, some team has to go to the wild card because there's like 13 wild card choices in the NFC this year. So some team has to be in them. And so maybe one of these teams gets that wild card. Even Drew Brees at not very good seemed to be a massive upgrade on either Winston or Hill. And it's hard for me to like the Saints given that.
Well, the other issue about the Saints. Wait. The other issue about the Saints is that Michael Thomas is very unhappy, and there's a good chance he's going to be traded. So
that would be my biggest concern.
Yeah, I mean, if Thomas isn't playing, then that's a whole other deal, right? So that seems unclear at this point whether he's going to play for the Saints at all, and that's a whole. I don't see how they could make the playoffs without their best player.
Yeah, that it doesn't work without Thomas. I mean, the way to look at it is that in his last year in Tampa, Jameis, his interception rate was almost 5%. And if he does that, he's not playable. But his lifetime interception rate is like 3.5, which is not good, but given the other things he could do with talent around him, is acceptable to get a team with an excellent defense to 10 wins. I do not like Jameis as like the if we're talking about the Saints as Super Bowl contenders, if we're talking about them as a wild card team that could win the division if Brady gets old, like Jameis could be good enough, which Taysom Hill very clearly is not. I don't know that the Saints had a better option out there. I would rather have Winston than Bridgewater. Certainly rather have him than Sam Darnold, who I guess should we talk about Sam here? The optimistic case for Darnold, who presumably the Saints could have had, is Ryan Tannehill, right? That just, that after 3 years of Adam Gase, well, I guess 2 years of Adam Gase, right? But, that there's some upside there. But like, the difference was that, like, Tannehill under Gase was sort of, like, disappointingly mediocre. Like, Darnold has just been just horrendously bad and gets worse every year. I don't, in the situation the Panthers are in, I guess I don't mind taking a flyer because, what the hell, there's no point trying to go like 6-10 with Teddy or 6-11 with Teddy again. But is there any reason for optimism about Darnold? Because I know you guys didn't even like him coming out of college. So is he what he is, or do you see any potential for upside there?
You can never tell in the Tannehill example is the right one. I mean, I thought, coming out of Miami, that Tannehill was finished, and then turns out no. But look, more often than not, that is the case. I mean, of course, look at Josh Rosen, right? I mean, who had a year in Arizona, and he was so terrible that Arizona instantly gave up on him and drafted Kyler Murray. And then, he hasn't been able to establish himself at all anywhere else, or it's Christian Ponder, or it's, so many of these other guys. And so Tannehill seems like the exception. So at the same time, and I think about Mariota, who clearly is never going to be more than a backup in the NFL at this point. You really think about how you have talented young quarterbacks that get ruined by bad coaches and bad systems early on. And so I was skeptical about Darnold coming out of the of college, because he threw a lot of picks in college too and made a lot of bad throws. But at the same time, had he been placed into something less dysfunctional than the Jets, you may be talking about an entirely different scenario. So I think he probably is ruined, I guess we'll find out pretty quickly here in Carolina. At least it's a low media market And so the attention won't be as intense as it was for him in New York.
God, I just don't like Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's not easy, but it's just, you know, it's just so hard to pick anybody, you know.
At least the man had a pretty epic Trump own, right? I mean, he stepped up on the Trump. He owned Trump pretty bad.
That was pretty outstanding. I gotta give him that.
Yeah.
And do you think that there was Belichick was also being strafed with that? Because there is a difference in that, like, Brady had that, but, like, Brady never gave a full-throated endorsement. You know, like, he sort of had that ironically. Like, Belichick actually wrote him a fucking, you know, letter the day before the election. You know, so, like, I think that, like, there was, you know, you sort of lump Brady and Belichick together. But, like, Belichick was, like, all in on Trump in a way that's not really clear that Brady was. So I wonder if the owning Trump was also about owning his coach or if that was just a coincidence. But I suspect that there may have been double shade there. But
the one thing I think it's worth noting about Tampa, and you know, to their credit, they did the unusual thing of having a Super Bowl winner, then bringing back every major piece from that game. But in the NFL, that's not necessarily a workable strategy. I mean, I guess they made it work financially, but you know, everybody a year older in the NFL is like 10 years older in real life. And, you know, can an ancient, you know, a team that is getting pretty long in the tooth manage to survive and be that competitive for another year? And I'm not really sure, given that, you know, wasn't a bunch of guys on rookie contracts to begin with, you know, maybe minus the receivers. I mean, you know, Evans and Godwin are still pretty young, but, you know, are they really, can they do what they did last year? And I'm not picking against Brady because for obvious reasons, he's the greatest player of all time. And he's proven that he can do things that nobody else can, but the track record of saying, you know, we have this team and we don't need to make any real improvements on it, we're just going to bring it back, is not really the kind of team building that leads to long-term success in the NFL.
Yeah, I would be, I think that the case against the Bucs would be their defense was very healthy last year. And that's going to be pretty tough to sustain. But, you know, on the other hand, I will say that I think everybody loves Arians. Another person who deserves a lot of credit is Todd Bowles, who just, you know, brutally outcoached Andy Reid, who had no adjustments for him. You know, and again, even if you look at his head coaching stint in the Jets, it's like, you know, I don't know who's doing more you know, with what he had. But anyway, even if he's not a head coach, he's an outstanding coordinator, and he was in Arizona and he was again. So that is the one thing, is that at least, you know, teams with good coaching can sort of patch up in a way that a lesser organization couldn't. And that is one thing, you know, and I think Brady understood that. I think, like, having Arians and Bowles, you know, is a really nice foundation, you know, if they do that. But, you know, certainly, if we're talking about whether they should win the division, I think they'll be fine. But, you know, obviously when it gets into the playoffs, that's where, you know, they you can lose one or two people on defense. But, you know, if you start, you know, getting a rash of injuries, you know, and you go up against Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, or, you know, then, you know, that's where you can see it. So I think that, you know, and this is definitely a team that's like, looks like it's going to collapse completely in 2022, but, you know, like, you know, given the age of their quarterback, I think that putting all their chips in this year makes sense. So, and I still think they're going to be awfully good this year.
All right. Well, let's
Tom Brady is almost old enough to be a front pager at LGM.
It's terrible.
And he honestly looks a lot better than any of us do. So
he may drink a touch less whiskey. I'm just going to say,
perhaps, yes. But, you know, once I'm on my experimental diet, like he is, we'll see. Well, let's move on to talk about another division that probably actually is not that interesting, which is the North, where it just feels like the Packers have that division going away, and you have kind of three also-rans there. But Rob, you want to start with that one?
I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say, right? And this is where we have to start making tough decisions, because not every team from the NFC West can go to the playoffs this year. And I say that not actually necessarily believing it, because I think it's actually legitimately possible that there will be three wild cards from the NFC West plus the division champion. You know, right here, you know, again, I mean, I think that with Aaron Rodgers coming back, you know, I'm not really a believer in Goff. I'm not really a believer in whatever the Bears are trying to do. you know, really honestly, it seems like the Packers here have to be the clear favorite. And it's not obvious to me how any of these other teams make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are some concerns with the, you know, but, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Rodgers is, you know, weird stuff in the offseason problem, but that's just Aaron Rodgers. That's just baked into the pie. You're not, you know, he's not like, you know, he's ever been like a super team oriented person ever. You know, and again, it's the thing is that, you know, you can have some concerns and you can pick some flaws. But, you know, Rodgers, you know, the one thing you can say is that, you know, even as Mike McCarthy's biggest critic, like Rodgers had begun to drop off before last year. Like he had gone from being, you know, as great a quarterback as ever played to like an above average starter, but not really great. Like last year, he was genuine, you know, a very deserving MVP again. You know, so again, it's like the thing was like even 90% of that is enough to win this division going away, almost no matter what else, you know, happens with the team. So again, there's, you know, the quibbles about the Packers are just, you know, quibbles about what happens when you get to the postseason. But in terms of this division, if Rodgers is healthy, they're, you know, by far the best team. You know, the Bears are interesting only because they actually, you know, you see Roger Sherman had a really good thing at the Ringer where he went through the every Bears quarterback since 1985. Rex Grossman was in the top 10 and deserved to be in the top 10. Let's put it that way. And Jay Cutler is pretty clearly the best. You know, it's a depressing, I think Trubisky's ranked too high because he didn't do air adjustments, but you know, I mean, at least they got the high upside player. But
yeah,
I think
Jim McMahon demonstrated you don't need a great quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Okay. Right. And the Bears learned that lesson. They learned it hard and they continue to be guided by that lesson.
I mean, say what you will about Lovie Smith, the man got to a Super Bowl with Rex Grossman as a starting quarterback. Like let that be on his tombstone for whatever else you want to say. You know, but I think like I like the pick of Fields a lot, and I think it makes the Bears interesting, you know, over the medium term. But you know, I don't see that, and he's not going to start this year. You know, and also like Andy Dalton is just beyond done. Like just you know, and not like he was great in his prime, but he is just, you know. Yeah, I don't think there's anything left in the tank here. But you know, he's likely to be like, the team is likely to be something like 1-4, before Fields even gets to play. So I think that they're sort of interesting in the longer term, but not a threat this year. The Lions, I think, are, you know, and I think they were right to move on from Stafford. You know, and we'll come to him when we get to the right. So not, I don't really believe in Goff, but that's like, they wanted the picks. And then if Goff shows anything great, I don't think he will, but you know, whatever, you know, they needed to rebuild after the Matt Patricia and, you know, and by the way, can anybody make a case for like firing Jim Caldwell to hire Matt Patricia? Like, you know, that's, you know, I'm not saying the racism is the explanation, but you give me another one, you know, and then, you know, the Vikings are interesting in that, you know, and sort of Kirk Cousins makes me feel like just an old fart sports writer, and that, you know, by basically like any conventional or analytic method, he's an above average quarterback. And I just do not see a team ever winning with him ever. you know, but he's also another, like, you know, Andy Vax Trufer, which I really don't like as quarterback. You know, for an organization that's already in some pretty serious decline, like I like Mike Zimmer as a coach. Fine, but you know, I like they seem like a relatively high floor but low ceiling team to me. You know, and just with all the COVID stuff, I'd be pretty reluctant to even pick them.
I really like Belichick's ruthlessness with respect to Newton on this. I mean, you know, I'm not anti Cam Newton as an athlete, right? I am certainly anti him as an anti-vaxxer, but I mean, you have to take the team into account here, right? And the fact that you have an anti-vaxxer on the team who may be gone for 2 weeks at any given time, I mean, it's devastating to an NFL team, right? And so, you know, that sort of thing, you know, has to be taken seriously on an NFL roster construction.
Yeah, and you can scheme around losing Cole Beasley for 2 weeks. You cannot scheme around losing, you know, who's the Vikings backup quarterback?
I suppose I should know that, but I'm kind of glad I don't.
Yeah, that is why God invented Google. Kellen Mond. I scouted him extensively, but for those of you who don't know, apparently he played, he was a third round pick out of Texas A&M.
Yes, he was. I believe he is who replaced in college. Who is that horrible quarterback of the Patriots? Oh, no, that's Stidham. Sorry. Stidham played for Auburn. I
might rather have Nathan Peterman than Stidham. Like, oh.
I mean, the Vikings are the kind of team that could theoretically sneak into the playoffs simply because of the new wild card structure.
Yeah,
you know, but they're not really very good. The Bears, again, it's hard to, you know, I mean, the defense is still okay, but those guys are getting, you know, Khalil Mack's getting pretty old. The Lions are a mess. I mean, it's a bad division, and really the Packers, I don't think, are all that great, but they're still going to win 12 games because that division is so bad.
Yeah, and that's the advantage they have, is just they're so, you know, that just, you know, having Rodgers basically that, you know, that they can, you know, they're not going to have to press people who are injured. They'll almost certainly get home field advantage early in the postseason. You know, it's a pretty, if Rodgers stays healthy, it's a good situation to be in.
Well, and I think this gets at the other phenomenon in the NFL this year, which is that it really feels like there are really two divisions, the AFC North and the NFC West, that have a preponderance of good teams, and every other division has like maybe one good team. Theoretically two, or in the case of the NFC East, zero. So, you know, it's a very, like the balance between divisions is very off this year, which is going to make for some really weird playoff matchups in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I guess we can use a segue. Should we move on to what is, I think, unquestionably the best division in the NFL, the
People's NFL division. Yes.
Scott, you want to start, since you know, you're a connoisseur of the division. You want to start us on this one?
Yeah. So I think, you know, certainly the, you know, I probably, you know, I'd probably say that the AFC North is the best division, but this, it's that or this. Those are certainly the two. You know, I think that, and they pretty much tower over anybody else, you know, and I think there's just the one interesting thing about this division is that, like, for a division that's clearly good, there's a lot of variance too. You know, it's not like, you know, there's none of these teams you'd be super comfortable with, like, penciling in for like 12 wins, but all could be really good, you know? So that's what's interesting. I mean, you know, I think if you, you know, all things be, I would certainly pick the Seahawks to win the division again. You know, but even there, like, you know, basically if you were to combine the first half of Russell Wilson with the defense over the second half, you'd have the best team in the NFL. If you combine the first half defense with the second half of Russell Wilson, you have like the Chargers, like, you know, it's so, like, there's really, I mean, even within the year, you know, it's so hard to peg the Seahawks because, you know, again, they're a classic stars and scrubs team. And especially on defense, they're just almost entirely reliant on, you know, basically you can move the ball almost at will against them. And it's just a question of whether they can come up with enough sacks and turnovers to sort of make up for that. And that's where they really need Jamal Adams, you know, for that scheme, and they really needed to retain Dunlop, you know, so, you know, and I think that, you know, I mean, obviously you have to like the fact that they brought in a new offensive coordinator, you know, and there are some signs, you know, I mean, I think Carroll, you know, was making adjustments on defense last year, you know, in way, you know, he seems to recognize the Legion of Boom is no longer there. And I think he has shown some adaptation. So, you know, I mean, obviously the Seahawks, you know, Wilson, you know, should be, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You know, Lock and Metcalf is one of the best one too. And by the way, can we talk about Bill Belichick taking N'Keal Harry with Metcalf still on the board? Just outstanding work there. and again, you'd like to see more depth. And of course, they go into the year with like seven running backs, which should get us to about what you'd say halfway through week two before they're all in the injured reserve. And then we're, bringing in Lawrence McCutcheon or something. You know, so I think that, you know, probably, you know, I'd say that the Seahawks are the highest upside in the division, and Wilson gives them a reasonably high floor if he's healthy. And of course, you've got Geno Smith. So, you know, should Wilson get hurt, you're fine. But black humor aside, you know, so I think that that's it. But, you know, it's a tough division. You know, the 49ers are obviously, you know, certainly, you know, Shanahan calling the plays, you know, gives them an advantage over some other teams. The quarterback situation there is just really interesting. You know, I'll leave it to you guys to evaluate the prospect. I guess Jimmy G will start until he gets hurt in week three. You know, but obviously the 49ers, you know, still have a lot of talent and a lot of upside. The Rams, you know, I as somebody who's generally liked Jason Isbell, you know, I'm not, you know, Stafford seems to be in pretty significant decline to me. It's an interesting gamble. And like, I would rather have Matt Stafford than Jared Goff, all things being equal, but that's a lot of money and a lot of draft picks invested in, you know, a like solid, but, you know, I mean, basically, you know, like, you know, I think very much of that kind of, you know, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, you know, level of, you know, like not bad by any means, but not really somebody you want starting your playoff games either. You know, so, and again, the defense is, you know, and they also have the Buccaneers problem where last year, they got away with a lot because their defense was really healthy. And, you know, if healthy, you know, the best players in that defense are so good that it almost doesn't, you know, but, you know, they're one or two injuries away from on defense from being very vulnerable. So that's three really interesting teams, like three really, you know, but I think that the Rams don't quite have the upside that the 49ers and Seahawks do. So I'm just not, I myself am not convinced that that Stafford can be great, although a lot of people would disagree with me, and it's hard to, you know, and the thing is, it's not like the Lions didn't have offensive talent. Stafford has played most of his career with like a first ballot Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Megatron.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, although the Lions haven't been great, it's not like, you know, he's coming from Adam Gase's Jets or something either. And then the Cardinals are probably, but again, I think Kyler Murray gives them some upside. You know, Cliff Kingsbury seems like, you know, the poor man's Chip Kelly to me. Like, you know, like he doesn't really seem to have a second act, and even the first act wasn't that great, you know, frankly. You know, so this is obviously a big year for that organization. And, you know, I mean, obviously with, you know, Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, you know, they have some talent on defense, but they'll still look like the weakest team in the division to me, unless you know, Kingsbury shows more forward thinking than he has. But how do you two see it?
So I mean, I think I don't dissent from anything you just said. I mean, I think we have three very good teams here and one pretty interesting team. Yeah. I mean, I think we have to stop and pause here and say that, you know, sort of to go back to this question, could there be four teams from the AFC or the NFC West in the playoffs? The answer is almost certainly not, right? Because they play each other. So unless every team in this division goes 4-4 in division, you're going to see some teams that just because of the strength of the schedule are going to get devastated. And I think that this is going to be something where injuries really make a difference. And also, I hesitate to summon morale, but morale can be important, right? And so, I mean, I think if teams get on a losing streak here, they could lose four or five games in a row in this division and just be completely pulled out of it because there are no easy games, right? Nobody, I mean, the easiest game here is the Arizona Cardinals showing up in your stadium, and that's not an easy game, right? No. I mean, that's that, like every other game is really difficult, right? Going to Arizona is going to be a tough win for any team in the NFL, and all these teams have to do it. And so, you know, I think it's probably the best bet that we'll have the division winner, and it really could be any of the top three teams. I would not be shocked if it were Arizona. Then you'll have two wildcard teams, but it's tough, right? Given how weak the rest of the NFC is.
And particularly given that just that, you know, like all the teams are good, but I don't see like any of these teams being so good that they're just going to absolutely roll their non-conference schedule. Like, you know, even Pete Carroll's best teams always have like, you know, two or three week lulls in which you don't really understand what they're doing. You know, the same thing with McVay's Rams, really. Like they go, you know, like they were an excellent team last year that lost to Adam Gase's New York Jets. At home, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you know. So I think that's like to have three wildcard teams, you would need teams that were just, you know, absolutely destroying their non-division opposition. And I think all these teams are good, but I don't think they're that good. So, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, it could even getting two wild cards out of this division, I think could be hard just because, you know, there's every team in this division is good, and I don't think any of them are great. You know, so that, and that's where there's an opportunity for like your Saints and Vikings and so on, just that's they're just going to have way more easy wins than any team in this division. So and again, I think I also agree, I'm saying the injuries is going to play a huge role here because these teams are so close together and are all, you know, and especially the Rams and Seahawks are real stars and scrubs, like top heavy rosters. So I think really how healthy they are is going to make a huge, and whether the 49ers can actually, because this is like, you know, basically, you know, the one year they were relatively healthy, they went to a Super Bowl, but that's basically the only year they've been healthy in 5 years. You know, so I think that's probably going to be the biggest factor in this division.
The one thing that the division has going forward in terms of the playoff teams is that their divisional rivals for the year are against the AFC South and the NFC North. So there are some fairly easy games. I mean, like, you know, the Seahawks close their last five games, for instance, are at Houston, you know, at the Rams. Oh, that's a tough game. But then they have Chicago and Detroit at home before closing at Arizona. So that's not exactly a gauntlet of late season.
Andy Dalton, 17 games. Let's do it.
That's right. And I mean, and through that schedule too, you know, they play, they're at Washington, which, you know, who cares? They have a home game against Jacksonville, you know, so they're not, it's not that hard of a schedule. And so there is that, but the Seahawks last year were so frustrating because they clearly have so much talent. I don't know what really happened to Russell Wilson in the second half of last year. I always kind of thought of Russell Wilson as a surefire Hall of Fame quarterback, but sometimes you begin to wonder because he really has never put together a year that's been truly dominant. He's never been first team all pro or even second team all pro. You look at him last year and he was amazing for the first part of the season and was really pretty bad at the second part of the season. The thing about the Seahawks is that receiver core is really thin. Like, yes, yeah. Lockett and Metcalf are great, but then you fall off to Freddie Swain as your third receiver. And I think like a 72-year-old Steve Largent may be the fourth receiver. So they don't really have anything. They have,
I think, Joey Galloway was in camp. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, he may have been. Yeah, Daryl Turner to go really obscure. They have no depth at receiver. I don't know. I mean, they should be good, but then you always think that. And they did go 12-4 last year, but it felt like the most disappointing 12-4 in history. You know, the Niners have a lot of talent, but they were a 6-10 team last year for a reason. There were a lot of injuries, no question about that. I do like Trey Lance quite a bit. I mean, he looks like he definitely at least has the physical tools. But do you really think that Garoppolo or Trey Lance is going to lead you to the promised land this year? No. Again, the same with Stafford at the Rams. I mean, I'd put him ahead of David Carr. I mean, I think he's a good quarterback, but he's also an old quarterback now on a Stars and Scrubs team. You know, it's improvement over Goff, and they are a good team. So if they can stay as healthy as they were last year, then sure, that's unlikely. You know, I really do think Arizona is a pretty interesting team, even though I agree with you about Cliff Kingsbury in that, you know, he was at that moment where any like 33-year-old white guy who directed a decent offense in college was getting an NFL job after 2 years.
Especially in the Big 12.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so it was kind of, you know, just this the idiocy that is the NFL and NFL management, you know, giving jobs to people like this, where Jim Caldwell's never got another job after, you know, after getting fired from the Lions. So,
Eric Bieniemy is still never, Bieniemy is still
yeah,
never.
Yeah, Eric Bieniemy is still not a head coach, right. So it's, you know, that kind of racism really helps somebody like Kingsbury or any, you know, young college guy who, you know, has figured out how to throw against the, you know, the TCU defense. So clearly they're going to succeed at the NFL level. So I don't know, but I like everybody else. I feel all four of these teams are quite interesting. Any of the four could win the division. I think you will see two wild cards out of this division. I'd like to say one of them is Seattle, but it actually wouldn't shock me if Seattle kind of fell apart a little bit this year. But then it wouldn't shock me if any of these teams won the division, including Seattle. So Seattle could easily go 12-4 this year too. So I'm a little unclear about how to feel about my Seahawks right now. But within the NFC, again, I just don't know who – there's not a lot – again, I just don't feel like there's a lot of teams that are better. So this is going to be the most interesting division in the NFL.
Yeah. I should read this out in case I'm tempted to place an over bet on the Seahawks. And I don't know what their over is, but so behind Metcalf and Lockett, the depth chart is, Freddie Swain, D. Eskridge, and, John, Urshua, who is also on the, injured reserve, but perhaps they have some great talented tight end. You may ask, well, the starter is Gerald Everett, pick out of South Alabama, backed up by Will Disley and Colby Parkinson. That is what you call a Stars and Like that is like basically two of the 10 best receivers in the NFL and like a bunch of like sub replacement level, like,
you if know, nobody gets hurt, sure, they're going to be great. But if one guy gets hurt, they're screwed.
And that's one thing the Rams and 49ers have is that like their organization's been a little bit better about like finding, you know, depth pieces. That's really one thing that's helped, you know, is that this, you know, to be in a situation of paying your quarterback market value, you really need to be able to do a good job of, you know, and Schneider and Carroll have done a good job at often identifying, you know, they got Metcalf and Lockett without premium picks and were smart enough to trade up for both of them, which they didn't want to do. So they've actually done a pretty good job of finding some stars at value positions. But they just galaxy brain so many of their first round picks on, you know, running backs and fucking run stoppers, and you know that they don't develop any depth of like wide receivers and tight end, you know. So, you know, and again, I, you know, it's kind of, you know, again, to complain about Steiner and Carroll's on some level kind of, you know, like, you know, compared to you know, 90% of the other organizations in the NFL, you'd be very happy with that. But there's these little frustrating things they get wrong. And, you know, that's what's happening in the playoffs is that, you know, all these, you know, whether it's hiring a bad coordinator or not having any receiving depth, if the other team can shut down your top two, or, you know, it's just, you know, there's still these niggling flaws, and you can kind of go through any, you know, all these teams in this division have a really high ceiling, but, you know, there's also just little things. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. And yeah, if the Seahawks won 7 games, I wouldn't be shocked. If they won 13, I wouldn't be shocked. It's a very, very high variance.
We hope that you've enjoyed the first half of our discussion of the NFL in 2021. The second half will be posted on Sunday morning. Thank you. Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of the Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of the Paranoid Styles catalog anywhere you can find quality music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through the PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again,